Hello and welcome to Lectionary at Lunch at Concordia Seminary. I'm Professor Tom Egger, and the text for this week that I'll be working through is Exodus chapter 24, verses 8 to 18 for the Transfiguration of our Lord. These verses from Exodus, in terms of their Hebrew grammar, are really pretty straightforward. It's a historical narrative, and so it's just a consistent vav consecutive imperfect after vav consecutive imperfect to a large extent. The vocabulary is pretty straightforward. What is really profound about this text is the theology that's contained in it. And appointed for the Transfiguration of our Lord, we will be invited to consider this text not only in the context of God's dealing with his people at Sinai in the Old Testament, but also in terms of the fulfillment of this passage in the person of our Lord Jesus, who is himself the glory of the Lord, whose blood ultimately becomes the blood of a new covenant, and who is the great priest who enters near to God on our behalf and brings us safely restored into the presence of our God. Transfiguration, then, is it's a glorious event in the life of the church. It is a time to celebrate the radiant and beautiful face of our Lord Jesus that was beheld by Peter, James, and John on the mountain. But in the church year, it's also a festival that marks the end of the season of Epiphany, the focus on our Lord revealing his glory, his divinity before the world, and an entrance into the season of Lent. And in the same way, in the book of Exodus, chapter 24 stands as a beautiful revelation of the glory of God. The people behold God in this passage, in his holiness and beauty. But at the same time, it leads into, as Moses goes to the top of the mountain and enters into the glory of the Lord, chapter 24 leads into the chapters that will outline the necessity of the tabernacle and the priesthood in the lives of the people. Blood and atonement will be necessary for this sinful people to live in the presence of God. Those chapters are marked especially by the interlude of the golden calf episode, which paints for us in dramatic fashion the outcome of the people's confident pledge earlier in chapter 24, just before our pericope, where they say, "Everything the Lord has spoken, we will do." In fact, they say it twice. They had said it previously in chapter 19, but when we come to the golden calf, we see that at the bottom of the mountain, where real life happens, God's people are mired in sin. And it's not enough to be given a revelation of the glory of God. God's holiness, his righteousness, his glory is ultimately a consuming fire for sinners. And so the tabernacle, the priesthood, the blood of the covenant, ultimately Jesus Christ and his saving person and work is that which will bring hope and a restoration of the relationship of God with his people. It's only in Jesus Christ, finally, that we will be able to behold the glory of God with our own eyes and come near to live in his presence. Well, let's take a look at these passages then, beginning at verse 8, and we'll move fairly quickly through the Hebrew here. 24, verse 8. Vayikach Moshe et Hadam, vayizrok al ha'am, vayomer hine dam habarit, asher karat Yahweh imakem, al kol hadavarim ha'ela. And Moses took, that first verb is from lakach, he took, direct object, the blood, and he sprinkled, zarak, and the direct object, it, is implied here, he sprinkled it upon the people, and he said, "Hine, behold, the blood of the covenant, which Yahweh has cut, or has made, imakem, with you all," you plural, "in accordance with," the preposition all can have the gloss according to, in accordance with a certain standard or rule, "in accordance with all hadavarim ha'ela," these words. The verb karat here, that perfect verb karat, which the covenant which Yahweh has cut or has made, it's probably a good example of a preformative, not a preformative, a performative perfect in Hebrew. That's a use of the perfect to suggest not that something was done in the past, but that something is being accomplished by the very speaking of the words and the very doing of the action at that moment. So not that God made the covenant in the past, but you might say, this is the blood of the covenant which Yahweh hereby makes with you. It's in the sprinkling of the blood and the pronouncing of these words that Yahweh is, in fact, putting the covenant into effect with his people. The question also arises in this passage, what are the words on the basis of which the covenant is made? Moses says, the covenant, the blood of the covenant which Yahweh is making with you, according to all these words. Well, what words? As we look backwards in chapter 24, God has finished speaking to Moses, and he tells Moses to write down all of the words and the ordinances which God has revealed to him, and to read them in the hearing of the people, which Moses does. And those devarim and mishpatim, the words and the ordinances which are referred to there, really refer back earlier to chapters 20 and then chapters 21 to 23 in Exodus. And the words are the Ten Commandments, the ten words, and the mishpatim, the ordinances, are all of the laws that God then gives at the end of chapter 20 and through chapters 21 to 23. So in accordance with all these words means all of the laws and commandments that God has given at Sinai. We perhaps shouldn't only restrict the meaning, however, of Devarim to those words that were spoken. It's also possible that we could broaden the making of the covenant to the concept of in accordance with all these things, all these matters, all these happenings. And this would include not only the giving of the laws then, but also the making and celebrating of the sacrifices and the sprinkling of the blood, so that the whole act, all of these actions, commandments as well as blood, are a basis for the covenant. Either way of taking devarim there, words, whether more restrictively to talk about commandments or more broadly to talk about commandments and blood sacrifices, either way, blood is certainly in the context here because Moses has said, behold, the blood of the covenant, which Yahweh is making with you. On to verse 9. Vaya'al Moshe v'aharon, Nadav v'avihu, v'shivim mitzekanei Yisrael. And Moses ascended, and Aaron, Nadab and Abihu, so a singular verb. Moses is the primary one ascending, but then the subject is extended with a number of others, Aaron, Nadab, Abihu, and 70 from the elders of Israel. So a large contingent heading up the mountain. Verse 10, Vayir'u et Elohe Yisrael. It just comes out and it makes this astounding statement, quite suddenly and without a lot of buildup here, and they saw, direct object, the God of Israel. It goes on then in verse 10, middle of verse 10, to further describe that sight. V'takat raglav kama'ase livnat hasapir uka'etzem hashamayim latahor. V'takat, and under his feet. And there's no verb here, but it's followed by a prepositional phrase, under his feet, like the workmanship of pavement of sapphire. So I guess you would, the sense is tolerably clear here. Under his feet was workmanship of pavement of sapphire, but it's with a prepositional phrase, like. So oftentimes in these theophanies, we get not precise descriptions, but this similitude kind of language. It was something like. Ultimately, these visions are indescribable, but the prophets do their best to give the vision to us in language. It was something like the workmanship of pavement of sapphire. Note that what's being glimpsed is that which is beneath Yahweh's feet. So on the one hand, it makes the straightforward statement that they saw the God of Israel. On the other hand, it perhaps pulls back just a little bit from that, and what is actually described is that which is underneath his feet, a pavement that looked like sapphire. And the final phrase, ke'etzem, like the bone of the heavens. This is a Hebrew expression, like the bone of means the very essence of. So this pavement was like the essence of the heavens, Hashemayim, with respect to its tahor, its purity or cleanness. Now, on the one hand, this is simply a description of something being clean or pure, and we're talking about pavement. But on the other hand, as we lead into the chapters on the priesthood and the tabernacle, this concept of purity or cleanness, ritual cleanness, tohar, will be an important concept. And so it's being evoked here. Yahweh's holiness is being evoked here, his purity, his cleanness. Verse 11, Ve'el Atzilei B'nei Yisrael Lo Shalak Yado Vayeketsu Et HaElohim Vayokalu VeYishtu. But toward, or perhaps sometimes El being equivalent to the preposition all, perhaps, but against the important ones or the noble ones. This noun, atzil, is not a particularly common noun, but it's referring back to the select group of men from Israel, Moses, Aaron and his sons, and the 70 elders. But toward the noble ones of the sons of Israel, he did not stretch out his hand. And they saw, katza, and they saw God, and they ate, and they drank. The narrator here has to note that it is remarkable that God does not stretch out his hand against these important ones from Israel. Why would he have stretched out his hand against them? Because they have seen God. Twice, then, the text tells us that they saw God. And whereas earlier in the Exodus narrative, God stretches out his hand against Egypt, but does not stretch out his hand against his own people Israel in the Passover, because their homes are marked by the blood of the Lamb. Here also, these blood-sprinkled elders from among the people of Israel look upon God, eat and drink the sacrifices referred to earlier in the pericope. They eat and drink these sacrifices in the presence of God, and God does not stretch out his hand against them. Verse 12. Vayomer Yahweh el Moshe, Ale Eli, Ha-Hara, V'haye Sham. And Yahweh said to Moses, the imperative here of Allah, go up to me. And then you have the mountain with an extra comet's hay on the end, a directional hay. Go up to me toward the mountain, or to the mountain word, in other words. So come up the mountain to me. And then the imperative of Haya, and be there. In English, we would probably say, and remain there. Then a simple vav plus a cohortative from Natan is the next verb, v'etana, so that I may give laka to you, direct object, lukot ha'evan, tablets of stone, v'ha Torah, v'ha mitzvah, Asher katavti lehorotam, in order that I may give to you the tablets of stone and the Torah and the commandment which I have written. And then the final word there in verse 12, the infinitive construct, the hifil infinitive construct of the verb yara, to instruct, with a third person masculine plural object suffix, to instruct them, or we might say for their instruction. So God has written on tablets of stone his Torah, his commandment, for the purpose of the people's being instructed, for the purpose of Moses and other teachers instructing them. verse 13. Vayakam Moshe Vihoshua Masharato, and Moses arose, and Joshua, his minister. Joshua is called the servant or the minister of Moses a couple of times here in Exodus. Vaya'al Moshe, and Moses went up El Har HaElohim, to the mountain of God. Just as in chapter 3, when Moses is out in the desert leading his flocks, and he comes to the mountain of God, to Horeb, and encounters God in the fire of the burning bush, this passage also refers to Sinai as the mountain of God, and there are a lot of clear allusions and echoes of the burning bush. Instead of speaking to Moses from the midst of the bush, God in chapter 24 will be speaking from the midst of the cloud. But in both cases, there is fire on the mountain and an unapproachable holiness to the God who is appearing here. Verse 14. Ve'el hazakenim amar shavu lanu bazeh. Ad asher nashuv aleichem. But to the elders he said, Moses is speaking here now, but to the elders he said, shavu, this is the imperative of yeshav, to sit or dwell or remain. Here, remain for us, lanu. So probably the sense here is wait for us. Moses is speaking, he's telling the elders to wait for himself and for Joshua to return. So, wait for us, baza, in this. This here referring to this place, a substantive use of the demonstrative. Wait for us in this place, ad asher, until we return to you. Vehine, and behold, aharon vahur imakim. Aaron and Hur are with you. So, he's leaving Aaron and Hur in charge. And now this final statement in verse 14, Mi Baal Devarim. Mi is the interrogative who question mark, but it can also have the sense of whoever. So here, whoever is a Baal Devarim, a master of words. A master of words here is somewhat of a technical idiom. It refers to someone who is a plaintiff in a lawsuit, someone who has an official complaint. And whereas Moses was the supreme judge of the people, you might say, as we saw back in chapter 18, where he was so overwhelmed by the task of settling all the people's disputes, now since he is going to be gone for a time, he puts Aaron and Hur in charge. He says, whoever has an official complaint, a legal complaint, yigash, this is the imperfect, or here probably better the jussive of nagash, let him draw near, Alehem to them. Now this is sort of a throwaway phrase. Moses is going to go on up the mountain, but it is interesting that Aaron will in fact be approached with an official complaint, an official charge. It will be the people as a whole, the sons of Israel as a whole, who will approach Aaron while Moses is on the mountain later on in chapter 32, and their complaint will be, what has happened to this Moses? Where is this Moses who led us out of Egypt? This man Moses, they will say. And they'll go on to say, let us make gods to go before us. So Moses' statement here foreshadows the people's complaint. And it also makes it clear that that they are drawing near to Aaron to make an official charge against Moses. And through Moses, or by complaining against Moses, also complaining against God. Verse 15. Vayal Moshe El Hahar, Moses went up the mountain. Vayakas He'anan Et Hahar. This Vav consecutive here, Vayakas, is a PL, Vav consecutive imperfect, from Kasa, a third hey verb. Simply means to cover. And the cloud covered the mountain. Verse 16, Vayishkon Kavod Yahweh Al Har Sinai. And the Kavod Yahweh, the glory of Yahweh, shekond, it tabernacled, it dwelled, it resided upon upon Mount Sinai, Vayikasehu Ha'anan Sheshet Yamim. And the cloud covered it. Here the Vav consecutive verb has a third person masculine singular object suffix, Vayikasehu. So again, the PL, Vav consecutive imperfect of kasa, the hey from the verb drops off and you get that ehu ending. And the cloud covered it, referring to the mountain, Sheshet Yamim, 6 days. Vayikra el Moshe bayom ha shavi'i mitok ha'anan. The verb here is, and he called, vayikra, and he called to Moses. It's interesting to speculate how we should read the subject of that verb. And he called to Moses on the seventh day from the midst of the cloud. Who called to Moses from the midst of the cloud? Well, the antecedent clearly is Kavod Yahweh, but is it Yahweh who calls to Moses from the midst of the cloud, or is it the Kavod Yahweh, the glory of the Lord himself, who calls from the midst of the cloud? In other words, is the glory of the Lord being personified in a sense here? And it's very fruitful to reflect on that idea, just as the angel of the Lord is oftentimes viewed as the second person of the Trinity himself, present and at work to speak to reveal himself to, and to save his people in the Old Testament. Here we have, perhaps, and I would argue invitingly, a manifestation of our Lord Jesus himself here speaking to Moses from the midst of the cloud, just as the angel of the Lord appeared in the burning bush in the midst of the flame. Verse 17, Umar'e kavod Yahweh ka'esh okelet barosh hahar. And the appearance of the glory of the Lord, ka'esh okelet. Here a verbless clause, the appearance of the glory of the Lord was like fire, and then an attributive participle describing the fire, okelet, eating or consuming fire, like a consuming fire at the top, barosh hahar, at the top of the mountain, le'enei b'nei Yisrael, in the eyes of the sons of Israel. Now that last line is interesting there. It's not just the narrator's comment that the appearance of the glory of Yahweh looked like a consuming fire at the top of the mountain, but he actually gives you this extra detail. Moses, as he writes this, notes that this was the perspective of the sons of Israel, who, remember, were back down at the foot of the mountain. So the narrative has taken us all the way up the mountain. We are privileged with Moses, you might say, to enter into the cloud. We are coming up the mountain with Moses, and we're there, as the narrator tells us, he is going to enter into the cloud, the glory cloud of the Lord, to be in the presence of the Lord. But just before he does so, we're told about the perspective of the people looking up the mountain from the bottom. This is the last glimpse that we'll get of the people of Israel before they do their next action in the narrative, which is to rebel against Yahweh by making golden calves. The last thing they see before they approach Aaron and demand the making of a golden calf, the last thing they see is the glory of the Lord at the top of the mountain looking like a consuming fire. Verse 18, Vayavo Moshe Batok Ha'anan, and Moses entered into the midst of the cloud, Vaya'al El Hahar, and he ascended the mountain, Vayhi Moshe Bahar Arba'im Yom V'Arba'im Laila. And Moses was on the mountain 40 days and 40 nights. There are a number of directions that one could go in reflecting on this passage for preaching. It's important to note the overall context in the Exodus narrative of this chapter. This doesn't just come out of the blue, but God has rescued his people from the slavery of Egypt. He has redeemed them and made them his own. He has brought them near to himself there at Sinai. He has spoken to them of his will and covenanted with them. And having done all that, he now brings Moses up into his very presence to receive the instructions about the priesthood in the tabernacle. I've mentioned some of the ways that it foreshadows their apostasy in the golden calf episode. There are a number of motifs that are important to focus on here. Perhaps most obviously the central role of Moses. Moses alone, and with a little mention of his sidekick Joshua, but Moses alone goes to the top of the mountain, enters into the cloud on the top of the mountain to be instructed by God on behalf of the people. So Moses, as first of all covenant mediator, sprinkling the blood on the people and relaying the commandments of God, but then also Moses as the one in whom the people are allowed to draw near to God himself. A second big theme is the theme of blood. Blood not only begins this pericope, but you might say that this pericope sets up all of the instructions of the chapters that will follow about blood atonement, tabernacle, and priesthood. So God, from his side of the equation, already here in chapter 24, on the very day that he is instituting the covenant, he anticipates the great need for blood and atonement as a part of the covenant. See, the people on their side seem to be, at least, convinced of the possibility of a covenant based on their obedience to Yahweh. Very enthusiastically, they say, "Everything the Lord has spoken, we will do." And then again in verse 7, "Everything the Lord has spoken, we will do. We will listen." But in fact, as the narrative continues, and really already by chapter 24, we've had plenty of hints in the narrative, after all of the grumbling episodes in the wilderness, that this people will in fact not keep their end of the covenant. They will not uphold everything that the Lord has spoken, and it will be more than necessary that God provide for atonement, lest he consume them on the way. And the third great theme in this pericope is eating and drinking in the presence of God. This communal meal of covenant sacrifices that was described in verses 1 through 8, or 1 through 7, I should say, is followed by our pericope here in verses 8 and following, as Moses, Aaron, and his sons and the elders eat and drink in the presence of God, eating and drinking as they gaze upon God. Reminds me of the communion hymn, "Here, O my Lord, I see you face to face," and the blessed reality that we have in Christian worship of drawing near into the presence of God, eating and drinking in his presence, and not having him stretch out his hand against us. Obviously, on the Festival of Transfiguration, we reflect on the way that this passage is wonderfully fulfilled in Jesus' transfiguration. Jesus ascends onto a high mountain where he is enveloped by the glory cloud of Yahweh. Here at the Transfiguration, Jesus, like Moses, in fact, he's there speaking with Moses, has a conversation regarding the priesthood of his cross and the tabernacle of his resurrected body. Just as Moses on the mountain would speak about priesthood and tabernacle, so also the text in the New Testament tells us that Moses and Elijah speak with Jesus about his departure, his exodus, which he was about to fulfill at Jerusalem. At the Transfiguration, Jesus reveals himself as, in fact, the very Kavod Yahweh, the brilliant glory of Yahweh within the cloud of God's presence. And in the Transfiguration narrative, we see a Jesus who will not remain on the mountain, but who will descend from the mountain to find an apostate people, who will legally indict both Yahweh and his prophet before the high priest, the descendant of Aaron. Yet rather than abandon his covenant with them, Jesus will reestablish his covenant in mercy through the blood of the new covenant poured out for his disciples to drink at the Last Supper and poured out upon the altar of God on the cross. They will see God and they will eat and drink. rich gospel promises in this passage, but also stern law. The stern law of the people standing far off from God, unable to come near his appearance like a consuming fire at the top of the mountain. And yet, also rich gospel promises that in Jesus Christ, in Exodus already, through the mediation of Moses, the people are given hope of drawing near, seeing God, beholding his glory, joining in Moses in the very presence of God. And with the transfiguration, we could add, joining with Peter, James, and John to see the glorious face of our Lord Jesus. Already in the gospel, we see the face of Jesus, and so we behold the glory of God. But the day is coming when we will truly be in the presence of God forever, and we will behold his face and the beauty of his glory forever, in the presence of God and the Lamb. Blessings on your preaching this text, and blessing on your continued study of the great story of Exodus.